Good evening, friends. This is Carolyn Evers. And as you know, it's one of my favorite times of the week because we really enjoy being here with you. And also, I enjoy bringing my special friend.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Welcome, Richard.
I hope it was me you were referring to.
Yeah, I have a little mouse in my pocket. I was really referring to that friend.
Well, that little koala sitting up on your pewter there.
Yeah, that one too. I got all kinds of friends. They don't back talk either. Oh, I've been looking forward to tonight or today, depending upon where you're located. I think I say this every week, it's going to be a special show, but I think this one is going to be different. And if you have signed up on our website and get our email, you would know that tonight we're going to be working with universal consciousness. And you might be wondering, wow, what's universal consciousness? What does that do? And we work, as you know, from the right side of the brain. And I'm not quite sure the message that universal consciousness has for all of you, actually. This is going to be interesting. So, Richard, can you connect with universal consciousness?
I think I can. You want me to share what I experienced?
Absolutely. I wasn't certain what you would be experiencing, and I didn't mention it. But yeah, I think it's a really great idea to share that.
Well, any expression of consciousness carries an energy that you can feel. It doesn't have to be one of the masters or someone that's crossed over, but any expression of consciousness, including our not-so-friendly dark ones, have an energetic experience that you can identify. And universal consciousness is no different in that regard. And so how I experience universal consciousness is firstly centered on the heart, because of course it is essentially love-based, as is every expression of consciousness that exists. But of course this, because of its nature, is very much in that way. And also it has this tremendous breadth. It's like it's almost all-encompassing, and perhaps that's no great surprise, given what it is. But there is this breadth, and I just have this sense of the wisdom that it carries. It's quite powerful, and it's not overwhelming, but if I focus upon it closely, there is a great power to this, a great strength to it. So it's very interesting. It's very different from any soul, if you will, that I've connected with, because there's, you know, the characteristics that I've described so often, but this is all encompassing in its experience. Quite interesting, quite different.
Wow. So now that you have connected with it, I assume that universal consciousness has a message for us and for our listeners.
Yes, I have no idea what it's going to say. So we're all about to learn something. I am honored that I should be invited in this manner. Firstly, there are perhaps no other human beings that are aware of my existence at this point, because I arise from a place that humanity for the most part is completely unaware of. You see, humanity in general, if they have some sense of their creator, perceive quite rightly that that creator, that God, that source, whatever term you choose, is your origin. And this is an accurate perspective for almost everyone on the planet. However, what is not understood by humanity is that this creator being exists in a consciousness. This creator being is not the highest expression of, you might say, consciousness or intelligence or whatever expression you wish to give to the broader perspective in which things exist. There are several other cosmoses and several other creator beings within this particular expression of consciousness. And indeed, there are other expressions of consciousness that have been brought forth as experiments in what you might consider creation in its broadest sense. And so what I represent is the consciousness as it expresses itself, within which prime creator or source exists. I am the consciousness within which he or it arises. And so I have quite a different perspective. I have a view that is much broader, much more comprehensive than you would normally come across. And because humanity, for the most part, is unaware of this, they do not even begin to contemplate the notion that I might exist. But I do, and here I am. And so I wanted to begin, excuse me, by giving you that perspective of who and what I am. And I arise from the efforts of two creator beings that cooperated in my creation. And I do not wish to sound egotistical, but the evidence does appear that this consciousness and all that arises within it is perhaps the most successful experiment in consciousness. And one of the key aspects of this is the degree of experimentation and the opportunity for the expression of free will. And so there is a great deal of creativity that has arisen, some good, not so good. And so it is an honor for me to be able to come forth and to express these things to you. And I will say to you, because of where I reside, not only do I have an awareness of those that created me and levels beyond them, but also I have access to all of the records of your cosmos and every other cosmos which exists, and there are a number of them within this consciousness. And also I have access to all of the cycles of Brahma, those long, what you would call cycles of time, that have existed as they have come forth from your prime creator, and all the minute details of every soul that exists or has existed within that context, because I have access to all of those records. It is not that I am continuously monitoring all of those, because that is not my role, but if I am requested to do so, I can very easily gain access to that information and to a perspective of them that is perhaps somewhat unique because of where I stand. And so I do also have a role of monitoring, you might say, what is unfolding in each cosmos and ensuring that, you might say, each creator being in charge of these cosmoses stays on track within the boundaries, you might say, the parameters that have been set for that particular cycle that is unfolding. And so, as you can see, I bring a rather different perspective to what is unfolding in your cosmos than perhaps others who might communicate with you in some form. And so I wanted to give you that background. And having given you that background, I wanted to remind all of you, in case you are not aware, that you live in a special time. Indeed, all of you that have come forth in this time chose to be here on some level as the extraordinary unfolding that is about to express itself upon your planet and beyond unfolds. You chose to be here for this. Make no mistake about it. And it is an extraordinary unfolding that is about to express itself. Indeed, in many ways, has been expressing itself for a considerable time because a great deal of preparatory work has been undertaken. And indeed, that preparatory work is being monitored not only by me, but indeed by those beings that created me, because these events have such an impact on the entire cosmos and indeed beyond your cosmos. Because as some of you understand, there has been a long cycle of experience with the dark, which indeed extends beyond the cycle of Brahma in your cosmos that you are experiencing. But a plan was put in place to end this time of the dark. And a key element in the cycle of Brahma in which you find yourselves within your cosmos was planned such that there would be this active interaction with the dark so that the interplay could be fully expressed. And so there could be a defined ending to their interference and to their reign. And that ending not only applies within your cosmos, but in every expression of consciousness and intelligence and beyond which exists. And so that is why these events have been monitored so closely by so many. But I say to you, this unfolding is truly an extraordinary event, so meticulously planned to ensure that it cannot and will not fail. So I wanted to share those words with you, and I am very willing to take any questions that you might have for me.
Thank you so much. Well, there's many questions that I have, and I'm sure our listeners have also, and I invite them to call in with their questions. What is the difference between the Akashic Records that is held in the center of the cosmos by the cherubim and the records that you hold?
I do not per se hold records. Rather, I am able to access the records of not only your cosmos, which your cherubim hold, but also similar records elsewhere. And indeed, there are records which are held within this consciousness, which in a way summarize the overall unfolding of the consciousness itself. So there are individuals, you might say, that exist within universal consciousness that supervise those records, but they are not records, if you like, that I hold directly. That might sound contradictory, but it is not meant to be. So when I look, for example, at the issues that are unfolding within your cosmos, then I access the records that exist within your cosmos as held by the cherubim. You are aware that there are duplicates of their records held in segments, you might say, on lower levels for different beings to access. For example, there are records held with every incarnated being upon your planet, and a similar process is used for every soul that exists. Some level of records travel with that being for many reasons, and they are a subset of the records held by the cherubim. But there is no copy of the records that are held by the cherubim outside of your cosmos, because we know that those records are in a manner preserved so that they are accessible to, for example, me beyond your cosmos.
Thank you. What is your opinion as to why those of the dark had an experience with those of the light in this round of Brahma?
As I mentioned, it was specified to be part of this round of Brahma. Most who have an awareness of rounds of Brahma consider that the unfolding of that round of Brahma is specified, if you will, by Prime Creator. Indeed, that is not so. The parameters for a round of Brahma are actually set by the creators of me, of this consciousness within which Prime Creator exists. And so, in a manner, you might consider Prime Creator to be a machine of execution, that a program is placed within Prime Creator that needs to be executed in the cycle of Brahma. And so that program for this cycle of Brahma specified this interaction with the dark, as I said, to give them, in a sense, great opportunity for expression, in part for understanding of all, but also in a sense to ensure that a mechanism could be set up to end the activities of the dark, not only within your cosmos, but way beyond it. Indeed, the existence of the dark arises from the most fundamental level of expression of consciousness. Or indeed, you might even consider intelligence beyond that consciousness. And this is because there needs to be balance between all things. And when this was allowed to go forth, you might say, there was a choice that could have been made and was not. And that choice was that there could have been a balance set up between the light and the dark in a manner which did not see that dark aspect expressed, but indeed the balancing, as you might say, creation unfolded, saw balancing simply between the light and dark aspects of the light, that is, the plus and minus polarities. But this was not done. And so this challenge to the light, you might say, has unfolded in very complex ways, not only in your experience, not only indeed within this consciousness, but indeed beyond it, way, way beyond it. And so, in a sense, you could say this influence of the dark came into this consciousness from externally. And so a plan needed to be put in place to bring all of this to an end. And so, in a way, you could say this cycle of Brahma, and getting more specific, this ascension process that is about to unfold upon your planet was set up, it was designed as the trigger to disentangle this entire interference process on all levels in which it exists, And I know I am not explaining this to the two of you. I'm not sharing anything that the two of you do not understand from your very intimate experience. But those listening to this radio show will not understand, for the most part, what I'm saying. And so the reason this was brought forth in this cycle of Brahma was really to create an ending point, to formally create a cycle which could then bring all of this to an end. And that is what is unfolding here. And as with all cycles on all levels, there are patterns and there are, you might say, rules, and there are cycles that need to be respected. And so such an unfolding takes an enormous amount of planning. It was not possible simply just to turn this off, because it needed to be given life and allowed to, in its own way, flower before it could be rounded up and shut down. And that shutting down is proceeding. And as you begin to reflect on the things that I have said to you, you can perhaps begin to understand why there has been such meticulous planning of this entire process, and why, as others have said to you, that this ascension process that is about to unfold upon your planet was planned before ever this planet was created, indeed before this galaxy was created. It was planned as a key element in this entire cycle of Brahma. So perhaps this begins to give you some understanding of the importance of all of what it is that you are part of.
Yes, it certainly does open many doors to something much larger than any of us have contemplated. And one of the things that you mention that I know is going to be hard for our listeners to understand or to accept is this concept of more than one cosmos. Can you give us some information about that, or perhaps the history of it? What we are dealing with is a new idea.
The possibilities which exist within this consciousness are almost endless. They are very open-ended and they are very flexible. And so there are many experiments that can be conducted in parallel, and there are perhaps infinite options. But also there is a desire to see life expressed in every conceivable way. And there is also a requirement for balance. And so having one cosmos would not be consistent with the notion of having balance. And so there are a number of cosmoses in which experiments are conducted. And you might consider them for simple purposes to be duplicates of your cosmos. It is a little simplistic, but it simply gives you a sense of things. And so there are multiple cosmoses that exist within this consciousness. And perhaps similar experiments in consciousness are being conducted elsewhere. Now, I cannot say, because that is beyond my purview. However, certainly the breadth of experimentation that has been and is being conducted within this consciousness is very complex and comprehensive indeed.
Thank you. Is there one being that oversees all of the different cosmoses, you might say have authority over all of them?
Ultimately, the authority, the responsibility over all of those cosmoses is held by the two beings who co-created this consciousness. And you might say on a level, they have delegated a level of responsibility to me for overseeing what unfolds, because I have responsibility, you might say, to oversee the implementation. Their desires and wishes and commands flow through me to all of those cosmoses, and it is not something that I simply pass through, you might say. Rather, there is a level of responsibility and authority that I carry within all of that to see it implemented as is desired. So the ultimate authority resides with my two co-creators.
Thank you. Maria is on line one with a question. Maria, welcome. What is your question?
Hi, Geraldine. Hi, Richard. And the consciousness of the universe. I have a question. We're talking always about universes and cosmos. Can he explain what is basically the difference between that?
Maria, our connection is very poor, and I'm not understanding your question. Can you repeat it again?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, but the words are difficult to understand. The connection is not a good connection. Would you give me your question again?
Okay. If he could explain to us, what is the difference really between a universe and a cosmos?
Okay. Richard, Maria wants to know the difference between a universe and a cosmos.
Firstly, reflecting upon what you originally spoke, I do not represent the consciousness of a universe, which I believe were the words that you used. My title is Universal Consciousness. That is different from the consciousness of a universe. A universe is an element of expression of creation within a particular cosmos. And so there are multiple universes that exist within your cosmos. I am not the consciousness of one of those universes. That is a very different construct, you might say. And so you might look at a universe as being a subset of a cosmos, and this is a, dare I say it, universal model, because it applies in all of the cosmoses. There are multiple universes that exist within each of the cosmoses. You might look at a universe as being a collection of galaxies and associated structures, and there are, as I say, several of these which exist within any given cosmos.
Well, Maria, I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Francine is on line four. Francine, what is your question, dear? Welcome.
I had a couple questions. The first one was, I'm trying to understand where the dark came from, where it started, or how it, or why it was created. I know it was created to balance, you know, the light, but I'm not quite sure where it came from, or how did it come from the beginning of time. So that was a question. The other one was,
no, let's stop with this, Francine. Excuse me, dear. We're going to take one question at a time. Okay. It gets too confusing. Okay. So you want more information about the dark and perhaps how it started, where it started. And so we ask Universal Consciousness if they can give us any more information about the creation of the dark.
Firstly, the notion of time as you perceive it is a structure, a construct, which arises within your linear experience of it. Yes, in a sense, time exists within cycles, but once you step beyond that, the notion of time becomes very meaningless, and yet still there is this sense of unfolding of things. As I indicated, the expression of the dark arose at the same moment as the expression of the light. And I will say to you, excuse me, that beyond the expression of consciousness, there are seemingly infinite layers or levels of intelligence, and beyond that, there is the expression of what I would call force. And the existence of the dark element, you might say, arises within that force. And indeed, the clearing of that expression of darkness within the force, and indeed within all of those levels of intelligence and down through expressions of consciousness, has all needed to be cleared and corrected for it to be, you might say, put back in the bottle. The genie has been put back in the bottle, and it has needed to be done all the way back, and the basis of the unfolding of the light and the dark restructured so that the dark cannot and will not ever unfold again. And this was all part of the plan as it was designed, which saw the dark participate so actively in this particular cycle of Brahma in this cosmos.
Thank you. Francine, I realize they're hard concepts to get your thoughts around, but let's have your second question, dear.
Okay. I'm just wanting to understand if humans are unique in the universe and what has been our, from universal consciousness understanding, what has been our role for this, is it just clear the dark, or is it bigger than that? I mean, if we could get an overview of who we are, humans themselves.
Francine, I love your question. So let's see what we get by way of an answer.
Your beautiful planet and the beings upon it was an experiment that was embraced with great excitement by the creative beings across your cosmos. In a sense, they understood its purpose, but also they understood the great desire that existed for all there is. Excuse me, could you please turn down the background sound, Francine, because it's very distracting. And so all of these beings came forth to bring the best that they were able to bring to participate in the creation of your planet and of the human beings upon it. And so the expressions of plant life and animal life and insect life and minerals and so on that you have upon your planet really is the best of the best that exists anywhere. Nowhere else has there been such a beautiful jewel created as your planet. And the same to an extent applies to the human form. Yes, there are many other humanoid beings within the cosmos, in many places, in many forms. It is a relatively common form of physical expression, though by no means the only one. And what is particularly unique about the human form is the powerful emotional bodies that you carry. No other beings carry the complex emotional bodies and hence the emotional experiences that the human being can experience. And in some ways, this leads to great joy and great wonder and beautifully complex positive experiences. And also, it leads to far more, in a sense, negative experiences, such as depression and so on. And the key thing for you to understand from this is that this complex emotional experience leads to an opportunity for the far more rapid growth of the soul. And so there is a great deal of interest for many monads to send forth a finger of consciousness to your planet because they understand that this wonderful growth opportunity exists. And so that is perhaps the major difference between human form and any other expressions of physical form anywhere. Again, in a sense, it is a perfected form, although in your current expression on the planet, it does not carry the perfection that existed in Atlantis and will exist beyond ascension.
Thank you. Is it fair to say that the physical form, the role of the physical form, is to work in a consciousness to perfect the soul?
You could see it like that. In a sense, some would speak of perfecting a soul, but really that is not a useful notion because, in a sense, the opportunity for the growth of a soul is infinite. It is rather better to talk about the opportunity for the growth in wisdom and understanding of that soul, but also the opportunity to participate in interactions that are not possible without the physical form. Interaction with other human beings, interaction with your environment on so many levels, these things only become possible in a physical body. And the opportunity to manifest and to experience the outcomes of that manifestation in a unique way, again, is only possible in a physical form. And so this is part of the reason that there was such interest in being present upon the planet at this precious time, because those who pass through this ascension experience will find themselves in an environment where the human form will be reactivated to express all of its abilities and more that it held in Atlantis. And so that opportunity that exists will be truly an exquisite one, carrying, as the human form does, that incredibly complex and powerful emotional body, married with the then experienced and wise soul. And the opportunity to work with this physical form in this manner is truly going to be an opportunity that many have clamored for.
That's a beautiful answer. Thank you. I would like a little further understanding of what you brought forth, because as I'm understanding what you're saying, it's the fact that a soul is working within a physical body that they can manifest. So I don't know if that is an accurate way of expressing it. And in conjunction with that, can a soul that is in spirit and not in physical flesh manifest?
Yes, a soul that is not in physical form can manifest. Indeed, souls that were not in physical form created your solar system. And so it is not that you only can manifest from the physical form. What I was specifically saying was that when you manifest in the physical form, then you have an opportunity, a unique opportunity to interact with that which you have manifested, assuming you are manifesting in your own experience. And you may not be doing that. You may actually be working to, for example, create another galaxy on a level, and you would not be so directly participating in that. However, when you are manifesting into your own direct experience, then the opportunity to interact with what you have manifested is truly unique. And as I said, when you marry that opportunity with the powers that exist within that extraordinary emotional body that you carry uniquely, then that experience is truly exquisite, truly extraordinary.
That's beautiful. It reminds me of the creator gods that created this. Well, let's talk with this solar system, or maybe perhaps this galaxy. Were these creator gods, where did they come from? And did they have other lifetimes?
Creator gods are simply souls that have progressed sufficiently, you might say, to be given the authority to create at the level of creating a solar system, or indeed creating a galaxy. And so, yes, they have walked many paths. Their monads have come forth in many places on many levels and built a level of wisdom and understanding and, you might say, trust, the trust of their creator, to be given this authority, to be given this permission. And creation occurs within certain parameters. Certain rules need to be respected, and the set of rules can vary by galaxy, by universe, and so on, so that these choices, you might say, can be varied across a cycle of Brahma. And in addition, the way that it unfolds, the plan, if you will, that is put in place, for example, for a particular galaxy, needs to be approved by Prime Creator. So the creator gods earn the right to create as creator gods through their journeying and through their experiences, and they then create within particular parameters and plans.
That's incredibly beautiful. It certainly must take a tremendous amount of experiences to be able to have that sort of authority.
It does vary to an extent, because the souls, as they were created, the monads, you might say, were created with different numbers of soul particles, as you might understand, and were created with different levels of authority and responsibility, and were given particular directions of focus. And so you might say there needed to be souls that had a lot of authority and were granted, you could say, wisdom and responsibility because of who and what they are. Without this, there could be no initial creation within which others could learn and grow and experience. And so there is this, you might consider, hierarchy of monads as they were created by all there is. So, for example, that one that you know of is Marietta, that opens and closes each cycle of Brahma, and who sent forth that finger of consciousness that you know of as Yeshua. Marietta carries a great deal of authority and responsibility, and really from the moment of his creation was able to go forth and create galaxies and so on. So it is a complex picture. But it is important to understand that every monad, every soul, has the opportunity to grow and develop and take on the responsibility of creating at, for example, the galactic level.
That is beautiful. Are there a large number of monads?
You might almost consider the number of monads to be infinite, though in truth it is not. It is a very large number indeed.
Thank you. We have a caller on line 3, Raphael. Welcome. Your question, please.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I'd like to know which monad I came from and who else among other fingers from monad who came through.
Which monad? I don't know that we can get an answer on that, but let's see what we can find out. Raphael would like to know something about his monad.
This question goes beyond where I wish to, for the most part, go in this call. And I will not, in this moment, bring forth the details of the other fingers of consciousness that have been sent forth from his monad. Firstly, there are a very large number, as indeed there are with every monad. And secondly, the place where I get involved with bringing forth this detailed understanding of this kind of journey is the work that I do with Carolyn through the Soul Origin and History readings. But I will say that your monad was indeed one of the earlier monads created, as you are indeed one of those cherubim angels that come forth to assist with the journey of humanity on this planet and indeed elsewhere in the cosmos. So I will give you that piece of understanding, but the rest is beyond the scope of what we are doing here.
Thank you so much. Well, Raphael, you did get some information here. And thank you.
May I ask something else? Raphael,
we are almost at the end of the hour.
Oh, okay.
And we have another caller that I'd like to give them a chance. But we did get something for you, and hopefully that satisfies you. Helen is on line one. Welcome, Helen, and your question.
Thank you. My question is, after this cycle of unique human experience, after we ascend to the fifth dimension, when we have a perfect physical body, will we continue the emotional journey, or the emotional body will be perfect and everything will be heavenly? Am I making myself clear?
Well, I think what you're really saying is you're talking about ascension. You want to know if the physical body will be perfected and the emotions that we express through that physical body will find perfection also. Is that pretty much what you had in mind? Very good. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
What can we find out about this?
It is the case that the physical body will carry a perfection beyond that moment. However, the notion that the emotions can be perfected is not a notion that has what you might consider credibility. You see, the journey of the soul is one of growth and continuing growth. And as you may have understood from my comments about the challenges, if you will, that arise from the powerful emotional bodies that humans carry, that the opportunity for soul growth being so much greater, this will remain. It is not as if humanity, when it ascends, has suddenly reached the top of what you might consider the totem pole by way of soul journey experience. And so challenges and growth opportunities will be abundant upon the new earth, as indeed they should be. And so, in one sense, the emotional body is already perfect and will continue to be. But if you translate that to mean that you will live in this idealized, perfected experience without any disruptions or challenges, that is not realistic in regard to the nature of what is ideal for the growth of the soul.
Thank you so much. And Helen, we hope that that has answered your question, dear.
Beautiful answer. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And so we would like to thank Universal Consciousness for being here. We only have 5 more minutes, and I'd like to thank Richard in a very special way for, you might say, being the individual to communicate with Universal Consciousness and bring forth these beautiful answers. And I have to say, I feel like we have just scratched the surface.
So, Carolyn, it might be worthwhile you just taking a couple of minutes and talking about those readings you've been bringing forth from Universal Consciousness, because they truly are extraordinary.
Yes, and I can understand why Universal Consciousness hesitated to give Raphael information about the monad and the journey that the monad has made, because what we are finding is such an overall picture. The composition is so very great as to how a monad is created, how the colors and the sounds, you might say, program that monad to follow a certain path. And then when it has, you might say, a path that it follows or an ideal, it sends forth fingers of consciousness all through what we would call the ages, following that path. And as we do these readings for people, the information is just so amazing. And one of the events that you might say grabbed my attention was at the fall of Atlantis, how there were souls that helped prevent this dimension from falling even lower, because it was thought that humanity could not exist as the particles that made this dimension became so compacted. It wasn't even known, it wasn't even in a record anywhere, that human beings had lived in such a construct as this. And so there were beings who helped hold the third dimension where it was, to prevent it from falling any lower. And at that moment, there were some souls that were perfected enough to move to the new earth, the duplicate earth. There were some souls that fell into what we would call the Stone Age. And describing what happened, I still feel so sad when I even think about that. And so all of the different levels that souls went to at the fall of Atlantis had to do with their vibration and their thoughts and where they were at the moment. And so it is this tremendously wide picture of the journey that the monads have made, along with the fingers of consciousness that explored every possible concept. Does that help?
Yes, it's a big picture, Carolyn, and I'm just amazed by the information that you're bringing forth in those readings. It's just extraordinary. Not only the information about the particular soul, the particular individual, and the journey that they've walked, and in some cases quite specific examples of past lives that they've had, including naming individuals, but also this broad background picture of the unfolding of things on the planet. It's just amazing. Just amazing.
Yes, it's been a real pleasure. I don't even know that that's the word. It's been a experience that you just do not forget. And so I'm very grateful for that, for Universal Consciousness that brings this forth. And can you believe it? We're up to the moment when we have to say goodbye until next week. And so I thank you, Richard, for bringing forth what you did the answers that were given to us, and the callers who brought their perspective. So,
indeed. And yeah. So thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, Universal Consciousness. It was kind of interesting. As I said, I had no idea where I was going to go, as I never do.
I know, but I feel like we hardly scratched the surface. Until next week, we love all of you. Looking forward to bringing forth some more information that is exciting, and we search the cosmos for those souls that will come forth. And you might say, make your day, give you the experiences so that you understand to a certain extent what all of this is about. Good night for now.
Good night, everyone. Good night, Carolyn.